Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitz. Today we are doing a shorter episode to recap the Big 12 tournament for Kansas, kind of talk about those games. We never really did the postmortem for them, but also kind of talking about how this, you know, affects Kansas moving forward, what we can pull from this and all of that fun stuff. So it's not one of those that's just meant to be a downer and recap a disappointing end of that weekend. There really is some information we can kind of take from those games and move forward with them. So I spent some time talking with Fetch about those, so I'll get you guys right on over to that interview.
And I'm joined once again by Steve Fetch, our basketball editor over at Rock Chalk Talk. Steve, how you doing tonight?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. So we're here, obviously, to wrap up the Big 12 tournament for Kansas, kind of see how that looks ahead for the team moving forward. And then we will be talking on a later episode. Well, we're going to be releasing them all around the same time, but we're going to have another episode or two talking about the bracket itself and kind of what we expect from that. But today, this episode, we're focusing solely on the Big 12 Conference Tournament to kind of do all that recap. So obviously, Kansas played three games in the tournament, beat Texas in the first one, 65-57, then beat a surprise team in West Virginia, 88-74 in that second game in the semifinals, and then lost I don't really want to call it a heartbreaker because they basically were out of that game from pretty quick into it against Iowa State, lost that Big 12 championship 78-66. So I want to go ahead and start with the first game, the game against Texas. So what were your overall impressions from that game? Anything that you thought the team could build upon from that game?
Well, I think it was just kind of a really solid effort from them. Devon Dotson played really well. Quentin Grimes played pretty well. That was kind of the start of his little run in the Big 12 tournament. One thing I kind of noticed against Texas, and this is kind of just more of a really granular thing about that game, but whenever Jackson Hayes for Texas was in the game, Kansas really attacked him, and as a result, they were able to basically foul him out of the game. He had to leave with that knee injury, but he had four fouls and only played 14 minutes in that game. And Kansas made a real concerted effort to try and attack him whenever he was in and try to get him in foul trouble. And then I also think they did something that they're probably going to build on towards the NCAA tournament, which was whenever Texas's weakest defender, Elijah Mitre-Long, was on Devon Dotson, they did a pretty good job of either clearing out for Dotson or kind of running a play for him. Jesse Newell tweeted a couple things of plays they ran for Dotson when Mitre-Long was on him, and I thought that was pretty interesting. So the offense wasn't great in that game. They didn't quite score a point per possession, but the defense really shut Texas down, and Texas had one of the best offenses in the Big 12 this year. So that was probably a pretty positive thing as well.
Yeah, I would say that was by far, I think, the most positive thing. You know, they held Texas to 32% three-point shooting, made 8 of 25. I was a little surprised that Kansas didn't take as many three-pointers as I was expecting them to. They only made three. And that actually was a problem for them the entire tournament long, was making three-pointers. But, you know, the fact that they had such a good defensive plan, I think, was the most, you know, the best thing to take out of this one. And despite all the criticisms people had against Bill Self this year, you know, he still knows how to coach. He still knows how to get the most out of his guys. You know, I think this type of game is the best indication that, you know, I don't think this year is Bill Self kind of losing his edge or getting out coached or anything like that. I literally just think it's a matter of guys weren't able to execute for whatever reason. You know, either just because of individual struggles they've had or, you know, not being able to play the players that we really want to play, all of that stuff. For whatever reason, we weren't able to hit the ceiling that we thought we could hit with a lot of these players. But it's definitely not a case of Bill Self, you know, lost a step or just wasn't coaching very well this year. All right, so individual performances from that game. It was actually a pretty well-rounded game for Kansas. David McCormick had 13 points on 29 minutes. Quentin Grimes had 12 points on 33 minutes. Dedrick Lawson had 16 points on 34 minutes. And Devon Dotson, who KenPom says was the MVP of the game, had 17 points on 37 minutes. So other than Devon Dotson, like you said, you know, it seemed like they were really playing to getting his, you know, to featuring him in this game. Who out of that group stood out to you the most?
Probably Quentin Grimes, just because it was such a departure from how he had been. You know, 3 assists, 7 of 8 from the free throw line, which was nice. Obviously didn't have a great job, great game shooting from the field. Defensively, he was pretty good, especially on the ball. Off the ball, he still definitely gets lost a little bit. But overall, I think he maybe wasn't the second best player in the game, but definitely stood out the most to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to say when Dedrick Lawson isn't the best player, it's really hard to say he's not the second best player. Quentin Grimes, I thought his numbers were a little misleading here, because while he only made 2 field goals out of the 10 that he took, he had several other ones that would have been easy layups if some guy hadn't hammered him. You know, he was taking a lot of fouls. He was drawing a lot of contact. And I think on any other night, most of those will probably go in. You know, I think honestly, you would expect him to have probably have made about, you know, 5 of 13 would look a whole lot better there, instead of the 2 of 10, if 3 of those had gone in instead of not being able to get it on the fouls that he took. So, he had a very impressive game. I thought his defense was pretty good, better than I thought it had been in quite a while. Overall, this was just a really, really good game for him. McCormick, while he had 13 points, you know, I don't know. It didn't seem like a lot of those were him creating it. It was more of Devon Dotson and other guys in the offense kind of playing to him and setting him up for easy buckets, which isn't a bad thing. I just don't know that I was particularly impressed by what McCormick did, other than the fact that he was able to finish all the opportunities they set up for him. Is that a fair assessment? Or?
Yeah, I think so. You know, not a – yeah, I mean, I not a great game, not a terrible game. Definitely kind of, you know, the thing with, I made a joke on Twitter, you know, Quentin Grimes was kind of trying to turn into Malik Newman a little bit over the course of the Big 12 tournament. Big Dave kind of trying to turn into Silvio from last year over the course of the Big 12 tournament. Neither of them obviously got all the way there and stuff, but
right.
I think, and we'll probably talk about this a little bit more as we get to the Iowa State game, but I think there's probably some stuff to build on for both of them going towards next weekend.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Any other final thoughts about this Texas game before we look ahead to the next one?
Well, I guess I don't know. Well, no, I'll save my Dedrick Lawson take for the Iowa State game.
All right. Sounds good. Yeah. I mean, the only other thing that I had was the fact that, you know, Texas, Ossetkowski was their best player, I think, by far in this game. And it was really just a matter of, you know, Kansas isn't, I don't think, is really set up to shut down 2 big men very well. And so if you pick between Jackson Hayes or Ossetkowski, you know, they really locked Hayes down. And then, of course, when he got injured, Ossetkowski had already done quite a bit of his work, you know, and so while he played decently well in the second half, I don't think he was nearly as effective as he was in the first half when Kansas was focusing on Hayes quite a bit. So, all right, so let's go ahead and jump ahead to the West Virginia game. First of all, I was a little surprised they ended up playing West Virginia. I really thought that Texas Tech was going to handle West Virginia pretty simply. Ultimately, it doesn't look like it hurt Texas Tech on the seeding line at all with them getting a 3 in the NCAA tournament. But were you worried about the fact that Kansas was playing West Virginia, or were I saw your tweet about you know, you wouldn't be upset if Kansas let West Virginia get through to see if West Virginia could steal a bid from whoever won on the other side. But what were your thoughts going into that game?
Well, yeah, I think that a win over Texas Tech probably would have done more for their resume, so it probably would have been nice to play them. But, you know, playing West Virginia, even as good as they looked in the win over Texas Tech, essentially as close to a bye as you can get in a conference tournament semifinal. So not the worst outcome in the world to get to play them and move on. I mean, that game was kind of a, just kind of a nothing game, to be honest with you. Nothing terribly stand out about it, as far as I'm concerned. You're right though with, you know, certainly didn't hurt Texas Tech. I mean, I guess we'll get to this in the next episode too, but I don't really know how you look at Kansas's resume and Texas Tech's resume and conclude that Texas Tech should be a higher seed than Kansas, but I guess we'll get to that in the next episode, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, just to talk about it just really quick here, I think they got a boost from the fact that they won the conference title in the regular season. Kansas State didn't get the same benefit of the doubt, but I wonder how much that is, you know, indecision or wondering about Dean Wade and whether he's going to be at full strength with his injury. But honestly, I do think that's the only reason that they got seeded ahead of Kansas is the fact that they won the regular season and Kansas didn't win the Big 12 tournament. So, all right. So talking specifically about this West Virginia game, I mean, like you said, there's not a whole lot to talk about. Other than the fact that it was a similar sort of rotation of guys, in terms of who were, you know, the main performers here. Dedrick Lawson, MVP of the game, had 24 points in 26 minutes. He had 8 rebounds, so he didn't quite get that double-double. Quentin Grimes had another great game, 18 points on 31 minutes, and he had 8 rebounds as well. McCormick did well in rebounds, but didn't really have the points there. But Devon Dotson, 13 points in 30 minutes. And then Marcus Garrett stepped up in this one, got some pretty easy buckets, I think, in some cases. He was driving the ball really well and slashing into the rim there. But he had 11 points on 30 minutes. Anyone specifically that stood out to you, or was it the fact that it's West Virginia kind of make it not really that big of a deal?
Yeah, I think more so the latter. I will say, just to echo a couple things I talked about on Twitter, one thing was Marcus Garrett, when guys really, really sag off him, which is what West Virginia is doing, he does a really good job of kind of using that space to try and get into the lane, and he's got a decent little floater. And it would be nice if you would look to pass a little bit more, because I think there's probably some openings for open threes or maybe some openings for dump-offs to whoever the big man is down there. But does a good job at getting into the lane where you can have a nice little floater, which probably is going to come in handy the way teams are going to play him in the NCAA tournament. And then Quentin Grimes, 5 of 8 from 3, 8 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 steals, 2. Just looks like a confident player, trying to make plays rather than trying to react to what's going on around him, which is something I think he was doing a little bit too much of over the course of the year. So those are kind of my two KU takes. I guess I do want to shout out West Virginia. You know, they played a lot better towards the end of the year there and did a really good job to just make it to the Big 12 semifinals. Derek Culver looks like he's going to be quite the handful the next couple of years. I think they're probably going to be right around maybe that fourth or fifth best team in the league next year. I don't love their backcourt as much as a lot of people seem to, especially in their own fan base, but they're going to have a McDonald's All-American, I believe. I know he's a five-star. I assume he's in the McDonald's All-American game coming in next year. And so you pair him with Derek Culver, and they're probably going to have the best front line in the conference. So definitely good things ahead for that program.
Yeah, and the fact that basically their entire lineup at this point now are, you know, juniors and then freshmen. You know, they're going to have quite a stacked team next year with a lot of experience. I wouldn't be surprised to see them up, you know, challenging for the top two or three spots. You know, just kind of depending on how everything breaks for them. But you know, I mean, just looking at in terms of talent for next year, it looks like Kansas and Texas Tech and West Virginia and potentially Iowa State are probably going to be the most talented teams in the next season. So I wouldn't be surprised if West Virginia is making a push for the top of the conference with those three other teams. All right. Any other final thoughts about the West Virginia or the Texas games before we move on?
No, I guess I will say, you know, it was nice to see them shoot well from three. We can probably talk about that a little bit more too. Would have been nice to see them take more threes, but I guess they shot almost 60% from two. So kind of tough to go away from that when you're shooting such a high percentage from two, but really nice to see the lid on the basket come off in that semifinal and then have it go right back on in the title game.
Right. I mean, yeah, they went 8 of 20 from three against West Virginia, but the only reason I don't think they shot more was the fact that they were getting so many wide open lanes to be able to drive to the basket. When you're in that kind of game and you just want to essentially put it behind you, you take whatever the defense will give you when it's going that well. So, like, I don't think they made a conscious effort to shoot more threes just because everything was so wide open for them. Garrett had, you know, I think there was four or five drives to the basket where he was basically untouched. Abaji had a couple. You know, Devon Dotson was slashing like crazy for that game, and Quentin Grimes was going pretty crazy as well. Like, they were giving him tons of space for him to get in there and get in the defense and make things happen. So I wasn't really upset that they didn't shoot more. It would have been nice to see them, especially since they were falling so well. But I mean, I completely understand just giving what West Virginia gave them. So,
all right. Yes, certainly when you're getting the easy baskets that they were, definitely no problem with them making twos. I mean, shots at the rim in general, maybe not with this team, but in general are better shots than threes, even with how much I like threes. So
right.
Getting pretty easy ones and getting easy ones with some of the guys they were getting them with, no problem with that at all.
Yep. All right. So we'll go ahead and throw it to a quick break. We will be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
And we're back. Okay, so last game of the Big 12 championship, the Iowa State game, I was fortunate enough to not be able to watch this game. My wife had the foresight, without even realizing it, to schedule me to go to a daddy-daughter dance with my daughter that happened to go for the entire time. So from about an hour and a half before tip-off to about an hour and a half after tip-off, I was completely occupied. My entire interaction with this game was two tweets. One of which was to put up a poll to ask everybody if I was going to want to claw my eyes out when I went back to rewatch the game. When it was a resounding yes, I made the executive decision to have my wife go ahead and delete the recording before I even got home, so I wasn't tempted to try to watch this game. So I'm going to rely on you for just how frustrating and how horrible this game was to watch. And I'll chip in with a little bit of box score analysis here, which I don't typically like to do. I like to actually have watched the games. But I, you know, didn't want to, adversely affect my sanity by going back and watching the game when I knew how bad it was. So first of all, just how bad was this game early?
Yeah, it was not great. I think Jesse Newell tweeted out they were, I think, under 50% on layups for the game. And we're not exactly talking about, vintage, interior defense. I mean, West Virginia Iowa State, definitely not known for their interior defense, especially with a bunch of smalls like they have on the court. So Kansas did a decent job, I think, at getting the ball into good spots. Marcus Garrett had quite a few of those kind of little runner layups that he usually shoots a decent percentage on. Dieter Clawson had quite a few decent looks. Combined, they were 10 for 30. So, not great. Devon Dotson rebounded in the second half, but he had a pretty tough first half as well, missing a couple layups. I mean, first play of the game, he blows by. I think Talen Horton Tucker was guarding him. Blew right by him, blew a layup. So, that was kind of indicative of how the entire first half went. And yeah, on the other side, I mean, Iowa State made, some real backbreaking long threes. Michael Jacobson, in particular, I think he's a sub 30% shooter, for his career. Yeah, 27% for his career. 2 for 2 in that game, obviously, cause that's just the way it goes. But, just kind of one of those games. And then in the second half, I mean, the defense just kind of fell apart a little bit. They were trying to do a little bit too much to get out on the 3-point line. And then Iowa State was able to take advantage of that and cut inside for some easier twos. And Kansas just never was able to make those easy twos as well. And add that to 3 of 18 from three, and it's pretty easy to see where the loss came from.
Right. So my I saw somewhere, and I don't remember who actually said it. I might be pulling together a bunch of different tweets and thoughts from different people, but the best comparison that I got was this felt a lot like that Oregon game in the Elite Eight a couple years ago, where Kansas seemed to be playing okay to start. It was going to be a defensive game, and then Oregon was just making everything from everywhere. And honestly, if we hadn't seen so many other teams just go ballistic from three when they, you know, don't normally, you know, I would have said that nothing probably would have compared, and that would have been like the best comparison. But somehow we've seen this happen to this Kansas team time after time after time this year, where they just can't shoot from three, and the opposing team goes ballistic for even just for the first half. You know, there's been several games where the other team goes crazy in the first half and then comes back down to earth in the second half. But by that point, Kansas is just so far gone and so seemingly disinterested in the rest of the game, you know, that they can't really come back. I will say, from everything that I've seen, from the few highlights that I've seen, from the technical foul that Dedrick Lawson got at the end of the game when Grimes fouled out, it didn't seem like they withered in this one. It didn't seem like they just gave up. They actually seemed to care about this one. Seem to have that fire that we've come to expect from a lot of teams. What are your thoughts on that? Like, is that something that we can build on positively, even though they got pretty much walloped in this Big 12 championship?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, they got it down to 9 or 8 a couple of times in the second half there and really came back and did a good job to, you know, tighten up defensively a little bit, did a good job to score when they needed to get it to, you know, 10-9. But every time Iowa State would just kind of, again, make one of those backbreaking threes or, you know, one other thing with Kansas too, that I guess I didn't mention the first time, they did a pretty good job forcing him to take a lot of tough mid-range jumpers. Iowa State just made them. And so it's one of those things where, you know, you just tip your cap to them and say congrats on making them and go forward. So from that standpoint, yeah, I think it was better that Kansas kind of forced Iowa State into some tough shots rather than just withering and going away like they did in Norman, like they did in Lubbock, like they did in Ames. You know, there definitely was a lot of fight. Dedrick Lawson with the technical foul, you know, like I said on Twitter, I mean, if I got the whistle that he did, I'd probably get kicked out of every game just out of frustration. I mean, I watched both the West Virginia game and the Iowa State game on ESPN's, like, above the rim cam, where they have that camera above the backboard. Admittedly, so I wouldn't have to listen to Fran, but it also gave a nice little alternate angle, and you can really see how much he's getting pushed and, you know, how much he's getting hacked whenever he's shooting the ball and stuff. And I do think that a lot of it, though, is on him to kind of go into that contact and invite that contact. He definitely does shy away from it a little bit, and the fact that he's such a below-the-rim player doesn't help him draw fouls. But at the same time, it's got to be frustrating to get fouled as much as he does and not, you know, get the calls as much as he probably should.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know what it is with his team. Like, I don't think there's any particular game this year where they've lost because of the referees. But I do think that there's been multiple games where the game would have been a lot closer and we would have been feeling a lot better about this team and talking about how much more competitive they've been if they didn't get such poor whistles on some of the games. And this really felt like one of those from everything that I've read and from everyone that I've talked to. Like, this felt like one of those games where, you know, something would happen on the one end where Kansas is on defense and they'd get a foul called. And then the exact same thing would happen on offense for Kansas, and yet they wouldn't call the foul there. And from what I understand, that's exactly what happened when Grimes fouled out and then Dedrick got that technical. I don't know who had the ball, whether it was Grimes or Dotson, had basically driven in and put up a similar shot to what Iowa State did with a lot of contact, didn't get the call. And then they came back down and Grimes challenged in exactly the same way with exactly the same amount of contact, and they fouled him out at that point. Also, you know, I actually saw that replay of the technical there. And at that point, it looked like Dedrick Lawson was, you know, playing the ball, was playing for the rebound, and got the ball in his hand just as they blew the whistle and he fouled out. And so he, you know, was kind of throwing his hands down in disgust, happened to be contacting the ball, and of course the ball bounced a bunch. So it wasn't like a, you know, he got mad, he grabbed the ball and slammed it into the ground as hard as he could or anything like that. It was more of a, he reacted to a call in real time and was just unfortunate to have the ball in his hand at that point. Am I being fair with that assessment, or am I putting...
To be honest with you, I can't remember. That may be correct, that may not be correct. I don't know. One thing I guess I do want to add, though, to your earlier point is, Dedrick and Devon Dotson especially, for whatever reason, don't get a lot of foul calls. I think part of it is they're kind of shying away from it a little bit. I mean, Dotson's doing all these kind of crazy up and unders and stuff like that rather than going, you know, right into the guy to draw a foul. And even though he is getting fouled, I don't think he's getting the benefit of the doubt for it. Maybe partially because of his size, maybe partially because he's a freshman. Again, you know, maybe partially it's, Dedrick Lawson's below the rim stuff. But I will say, you know, this team is offensively challenged enough. So when you got your two highest usage guys not able to pick up those points at the free throw line that they probably should be getting, it just makes the offense look worse. So you're right. It's definitely not a thing where they're losing because of the refs, but it's not a case like last year where there were definitely some games where, Devontae Graham would maybe not get a couple of calls or whatever. Well, he could go out and shoot 40% from three, so it didn't really matter as much. Kansas doesn't, you know, have the ability to do that this year. They need those points at the rim, and they need those points at the free throw line in order to score enough to win. So, kind of makes it a little bit worse this year.
Yeah, and we did have this exact conversation regarding Dotson, the fact that a lot of his game is built on going around guys and avoiding contact as much as possible so that he can try to scoop and score like that. Which does not lead to him getting many foul calls, because most of the time when there's contact, it's a glancing blow. Then he can shake that off enough to make it look like there wasn't really any contact, like it wasn't affecting him at all. So just the way that his game is, I don't think he's ever going to be a guy that's going to get a lot of contact unless he fundamentally changes the way that he plays the ball, which is unfortunate because he's doing a lot of things and taking a lot of contact that normally would have gotten called. A guy like Devontae Graham would go into a guy's body enough to get that call and still be able to kind of push through it. Dotson, I think, you know, it's tough for me to say because I don't know what they're actually doing. But, you know, just the way that his frame is, it seems like he needs to, you know, put on a little bit of muscle just so that he has that ability to power through the contact and make it a little bit more obvious that he's getting contacted. Hopefully that's something that they can work on. Hopefully it's something, that they can do kind of seamlessly without him losing any of his quickness or anything like that. But I do think that's kind of an area where he needs to improve. In order to be able to get those kind of calls and to put this team in a better position to win going forward. So speaking of going forward, overall from this entire weekend, what would you say the overarching themes and thoughts of what they can do moving into the NCAA tournament? Like what do they need to focus on that was good? What do they need to try to improve in this week of practice before their first game? And like, what can we as fans kind of expect coming from this to move forward with?
Well, I think one thing that they definitely need to focus on, it's kind of the same thing they've needed to focus on all year and haven't really done it, is defending the three-point line. You know, they give up way too many threes, and we'll talk about this in the bracket episode, but that's going to be a huge issue, at least for their first couple NCAA tournament games, if they have that many, fingers crossed. And it's just something that they need to really work on. I think another thing that they probably need to work on is, generating good, easy looks for Dedrick Lawson. It's no secret that they're going to have to ride him as far as he's willing to take him. So making sure that he has, easy looks, whether that be out on the perimeter where he can ISO on a guy or whether that be inside and he can take advantage of, some smaller guys. But that's probably the other thing as well. And then I think, the other thing too is just building off that. I mean, obviously teams are going to send double, maybe even triple teams, at Dedrick Lawson, given what else they have offensively on the roster. So it's going to be up to the other guys to make some big shots, and get themselves into good positions so that the spacing is, that's the other thing in that Iowa State game. I mean, the spacing was, just all sorts of off. Often when guys would be driving into the lane, especially, a lot of those Marcus Garrett ones, there'd be two Iowa State defenders there. And obviously you're not leaving a lot of guys to go defend Marcus Garrett. So it's an issue of guys not vacating space, and also an issue of, you know, Marcus Garrett needing to realize he can't drive into two guys. So kind of just, you know, a spacing thing on both ends is kind of what they need to worry about going forward, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with that, but I think the main thing that they need to focus on is finding out what it's going to take to get Grimes and or Agbaji going either in the same game or at least making sure that they both don't, you know, fall down flat in the exact same game. I don't remember who it was. One of the KU beat writers, I believe it was Jesse Noah, but I might be wrong, that basically tweeted sometime during the Iowa State game, you know, how to tell if Kansas is going to have a good game. Step one is Quentin Grimes having a good game. If not, then step two is Ochai Agbaji having a good game. And step three was if both of those. Yeah, here we go. It was. Jesse Noel, he goes, will KU basketball win in three steps? One, Ochai plays well. KU wins. Two, Ochai doesn't play well. And Marcus Garrett shoots well with opponents not guarding him. KU wins. Three is one and two don't happen. KU loses. So actually, I was wrong. It had more to do with Garrett, you know, doing something ridiculously crazy in terms of shooting well. from based on what he's done. But, you know, I do think that a lot of that is predicated on Agbaji and Grimes. Because if you have one of those two that are playing well and can be that third offensive option for Kansas, it takes a lot of pressure off of Dotson and it takes a lot of pressure off of Lawson and gives them an opportunity to get the space that they need to operate the way that they need to. And that's really been the biggest problem. You know, Quentin Grimes had 10 points in this game, but I did absolutely nothing from the three-point line. You know, so he wasn't able to kind of provide that spacing that they really needed. And Agbaji was pretty much non-existent. In 21 minutes, he only had 5 points against Iowa State. You know, in those games, we've seen both Agbaji and Grimes kind of disappear, you know, in terms of games where they just fell flat and had a lot of problems. So we have to avoid those. Kansas really needs that third offensive scoring option to really open up that offense and give them an opportunity moving forward in the Big 12 tournament or in the NCAA tournament. So, all right. Any other final thoughts from the Big 12 tournament?
Well, I think just to piggyback on your last thought there, I think Kansas really just needs to let it fly from three, whether it's, you know, Marcus Garrett even or a Charlie Moore or, you know, guys who really haven't shown that they've been good shooters. Just because it destroys spacing so much if the teams know you're not going to take them. It's one thing to be a bad shooter and take them. But if you take them and make, you know, say Marcus Garrett makes one of his first three or something like that. Yeah. Teams aren't all of a sudden going to run out and close out hard and give a wide open lane, but they are going to play up on him a little bit more and play a little bit more attention to him, which is going to open up things inside a little bit more. And every little bit helps when you got a guy like Dedrick Lawson down low. So, even if they're not falling, I think it's probably important to just keep shooting them. And who knows? I mean, you might have that one game where, you know, maybe you make 9 out of 21 or whatever like that. And that's a huge bonus for a team that has definitely shown that they can lock down opponents and make, you know, string together stops, but hasn't really shown that they can win a game offensively. So you add a little bit of you know, offensive output more than you're expecting, and I think that's going to do a lot towards their chances to win and advance in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, and I mean, I definitely think, you know, the only other thing to kind of take forward is just the fact that Kansas still has lots of problems when they do not have a friendly crowd. You know, because they played well against Texas and West Virginia when the crowd was overwhelmingly supporting them. But Iowa State travels really, really well down to the Big 12 tournament. And so that was at least 50% Iowa State fans, I think. And of course, any of the K-State fans that kind of were left that came for, you know, because they assumed that K-State was going to make it to the championship. They obviously were rooting for Iowa State over Kansas. That was well evidenced by the, you know, FKU chants that happened after the game was over. I mean, that's kind of the other takeaway is that Kansas needs to make sure that they needs to do whatever they can to avoid the arena crowd turning on them in the NCAA tournament. You know, they got a decent draw, I think, to kind of help them avoid that, but it's going to be super, super important for them. So, all right. So we'll go ahead and leave it there. We can pick up that last point in the next episode. I think it'll probably be one of the first things to talk about actually. So, but we'll go ahead and leave that there for tonight. Thank you so much for joining me, Fetch.
Yeah. Thanks a lot.
All right.
And that'll do it for today's episode. Thank you guys so much for listening. Recap of other events that happened over the weekend. The baseball team dropped a few games in St. John, up at St. John's on, on Saturday. Actually, it looks like they got swept at St. John's, losing 1-0 on Friday, 3-1 on Saturday, and then 11-3 on Sunday. So not a very good weekend for them, unfortunately. The softball team, also had some problems. They hosted the Rock Chalk Challenge. They had Tulsa on Friday. They lost 11-5 in that game. They won 2-0 against Nebraska on Saturday morning, but then dropped the afternoon game 4-0 again against Tulsa. They beat Nebraska again on Sunday to round it out 1-0. So, an up and down weekend for them. Oh, they also had the game against Omaha, on Monday, where they won 8-0 in 6 innings. So, an overall, I think, successful week for them going 3-2, considering some of the other struggles that they have previously had recently. So, the tennis team was also in action. They lost, they split a couple matches. They lost the first one at Oklahoma State 6-1, which is unfortunate. But then they bounced back with a 4-3 win at Oklahoma. Just like most other sports, playing at home is definitely an advantage, in these sorts of matches. So it was good to see them go ahead and bounce back and get that win against Oklahoma. And then women's golf has, started the Briars Creek Invitational. That started on Monday. Yesterday, and that is continuing today. It should be going for a while. Coming up this week, other than obviously the NCAA tournament, we have the NCAA Swimming and Diving Championships that are, those start tomorrow on Wednesday, and those go through the rest of the weekend. The baseball team and softball team are both playing Wednesday, March 20th at Wichita State. It looks like, actually they're playing at the same time at 6 p.m. The softball team you can catch on the Jayhawk Radio Network. It looks like there is similarly live audio for the Wichita State baseball game. I believe you can also find that on the online KU Radio Network. And then, obviously, Thursday coming up, we have Kansas's game against Northeastern in the NCAA tournament. That will be at 3 p.m. on TNT. So for any of you guys that wanted to tune into that and are going to be stuck at work, find a way to stream TNT, and you should be able to be able to look at that just fine. We will be on our next episode, which should drop in the morning, tomorrow morning on Wednesday, previewing the brackets. The only real games or things that we didn't talk about was the first four. So, sorry that you guys won't have that for tonight's first four games and then tomorrow's first four games. But we do actually have a nice long discussion with Fetch that we'll be dropping tomorrow, talking about the NCAA tournament with KU's draw and, the potential of, KU UNC in the Sweet 16 and Iowa State getting a very favorable, I think, placement there. But so we will go ahead and catch that tomorrow. But once again, thank you guys so much for listening to this podcast. If you haven't already, please do find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Rate, subscribe, review, 5 stars, nice comments, all that fun stuff. It really does help get the podcast out there so that more people can listen. And we'll go ahead and leave it there. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will catch you next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.